Welcome. It's nice to see everybody coming back, even though it's relatively late, and coming for ritual. I personally love ritual now, though I didn't always. But I know it's some people like it, some people don't like it. But it is a practice. Yeah. So it would just like, when you sit down to meditate, sometimes it's challenging and you don't feel like it, and all sorts of stuff comes and it's hard to engage. It's the same with ritual, in theory. That if you're doing a puja, threefold puja, sevenfold puja, if you're chanting a mantra, there'll be times when you're sort of totally present, totally there, and it'll take you somewhere, and the energy will be there. And it's a bit like when you get into very absorbed meditation states, yeah. And there's times when you might not be. I mean, I always find myself engaged in, but I know other people don't always. But there's times when I'm, yeah, it's almost like a mirror as well, like, where am I at this moment in relationship to the devotional practice, to the ritual, to the mantra, where's my faith at? Where's my receptivity at? There's times when you might be more receptive, times when less, times when you might be feeling like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to be doing this, and I'm just coming along because I'm on a retreat and it seems to be expected of it, And there's other times when you really, really want to be doing one. I think there's something special about being in the same room with people doing a ritual, and there's that the collective sound of you chanting mantras and then going up in person to a shrine and making an offering. But I've been really surprised at how strong rituals can be online. I've been to quite a few that I found very strong and very moving, and that really take me somewhere else. And some of those led by Ratna Deva, actually, and Pranyanita. And sometimes when I've been a punter on someone else's retreat online, I've been surprised at how strong a ritual can be as well. And just chanting mantras. Any of you who come to Paramananda's online retreats or his weekly class, he'll quite often like keep going on a mantra for like 20 minutes or so. It's so strong sometimes, yeah. Anyway, we probably won't be doing our mantras for that long, but what we're going to do is I'm going to say a few more thoughts around the theme. We'll have a period of meditation, but it'll be just sitting. Yeah, having a bell at the beginning, a bell at the end. And I think it's always good to sort of balance whatever practices you're doing that have a little bit more trying to change, actively trying to work in your meditation. And however receptive your approach. When we're doing mindfulness of breathing, in a way, we're trying to cultivate more awareness, trying to be more present. When we're doing metta bhavana, we're trying to cultivate more kindness or compassion. So sometimes we can do that in a very open, receptive way, but there's still that intention there somewhere. Whereas just sitting, we're just sitting. Yeah. Just open. And, yeah, so after the meditation, we'll do a threefold puja again. Trying to stay quite simple. We will be doing sevenfold puja later in the retreat. So you've just got the opening reverence to the three jewels, and after that we'll have a mantra, a Shakyamuni mantra, the historical Buddha, which seems appropriate with the threefold puja. And that's going to be led by Ratnadeva. And then we also will be doing the next three verses, where we're sort of reverencing the three jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha. And after that we'll have a reading, and then we'll do the final offerings, the traditional offerings of incense, candles and flowers to the Buddha. And then we'll end with an Amitabha mantra, again led by Ratnadeva. And if you feel like making an offering in your particular space at any time during the puja, feel free, and especially maybe during the mantras. And that will be the evening, yes. The reading is going to be by Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. I was sort of a little bit like, don't want to keep sort of fairly early Pali if I'm doing a threefold puja, but actually I wanted to do a particular reading, and it links in with some of the things that we've been looking at and reflecting on, or I hope. And yeah, just be open if any of it resonates, and then we'll go on to those final verses of the offerings and the puja. We'll end with the Amitabha mantra, and we'll do it in call and response again, with me doing the calling and Deva doing the response, and then you can join in your own space. Yeah. So this being that becomes, on the arising of this that arises, this not being that does not become, on the ceasing of this, that ceases. So we just keep on repeating. I think repetition can be quite helpful. It sinks in sometimes gradually if we keep repeating things, as long as we're receptive and not just sort of, oh, I've heard this before, and just ignore it. But if you just sort of, oh, here it is again. How do I feel about it now? What's my response to it now? Maybe just reflecting a bit more deeper. At some point, maybe it'll go a bit deeper or inspire you or touch you. Even though you may have heard it many, many times before and it hasn't done that. So, but yeah, basically we're talking again about conditions and conditioned, co-arising, dependent. Things arising in dependence on other conditions. So this afternoon, Ratnadeva was mentioning that the whole, the Four Noble Truths are so intimately linked and so integral when we're doing this work, and he brought up that medical model of the cure, the Buddha sort of, there's suffering, you know, there's a cause of suffering, there's a path to lead from suffering, and then what that actually is, you know, which is basically the Dharma. And you can practice it in lots of different ways, and originally he presented it in terms of the Eightfold Path. But then later, and especially towards his end, he was talking a lot more about the threefold path of ethics, meditation and wisdom, which we've been banging on about on this retreat as well. So also I did a little bit on that first couple of days of how craving leads to suffering, suffering leads to faith, faith leads to joy, as part of that chain of sort of conditions and that the Buddha saw. But the Deva also talked about how one of the ways of getting away from the suffering was non-craving. Yeah. So we're always working on those different levels. So on the one level, we're trying to work with things like our craving and our aversion and our ignorance and delusion, which are the sort of at the root of our experience, you know, sometimes called the root poisons. But they'll always be there until we're enlightened. And I suppose one of the things we're trying to do is become more aware of them and how they affect us and loosen their effect or not, or how much we're driven by those, which is a long journey, long path. But also we shouldn't judge ourselves for experiencing, you know, craving or aversion, for being ignorant or deluded, because that is just the nature of our experience and our reality. Yeah, that's what we're working with. So on the one level we're working with those, but on another level we're turning towards our experience, not pushing it away. So being aware of the craving, being aware of the suffering, and if we can actually turn towards it, be with it in a different kind of relationship, you know, maybe with a bit more equanimity, a bit more patience, a bit more kindness, compassion, spaciousness around it, we do find that maybe we can move into that experience of joy and faith. Yeah. But from that experience of suffering arises faith, or shraddha. And I think that's a really key part of our practice. When we first start to find ourselves being touched, moved, inspired by the Dharma, by the Buddha, by the Sangha. It may be by all of them, it may be by one of them, it may be just a glimpse, but there's something about them that resonates with us and that will draw us. You know, we talked about Amitabha again and how he helps us to transform the poison of craving, not by not by the path of renunciation, but by moving towards something of greater value, something that's beautiful. And that's where the sort of faith and the shraddha comes in. Yeah. And the reason I'm talking about all of that is because when we do devotional practice, when we do chanting, when we do mantra chanting, when we do rituals, they are practices that are specifically there to help us to cultivate and develop our faith. So that if we can have a sense of openness there, receptivity, or just sort of see what will happen. It's not asking us to immediately feel something that we don't feel. Again, we always want to be real about our experience, but maybe just give it a go. You know, I used to be very cynical and very blah, 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 blah. And when I actually got over myself, let go of it and let myself join in a puja, it had a very strong effect, you know. But there was all that holding back, all that sort of judging, and no, that's not me, you know. But actually it was me, or part of me. Anyway, there's an invitation when we get to the puja, when we get to the mantra chanting, to just be as present as you can, and again, like, see it as a practice, you know, and see what happens. Okay.
Sarah has her hand up, Bodhilila.
Okay, Sarah. Do you want to say something?
Yes. Yes, I would really love to know sometimes the meaning of the actual translation of the things that we are chanting and the things that you're saying in these rituals. Is it possible for you, because we say it all in Sanskrit and I don't understand Sanskrit, so is that possible for you to tell us before we go into it, the actual
Well, the
translations?
actual ritual is in English.
The actual ritual, yeah. But
And
when
it's
we
just
start doing
three
the chanting
mantras. Yes,
and the
well,
mantras.
sure. Well, the first mantra is going to be a Shakyamuni mantra. So it's basically Om Muni Muni Mahamni Shakyamuni Swaha. And it's a mantra that's basically dedicated to the historical Buddha, who's from the Shakya clan, you know. And Muni is a sort of wise man, isn't it? Nadeva, you're the person that's a Pali scholar, aren't you? Maha is big. But basically, we're basically calling on the Buddha, trying to connect with the Buddha and his qualities when we chant his mantra. And in terms of devotional practice, we have that sense, not that we're looking up at the Buddha, he's not a creator god or anything like that, but he's someone who was a human being, you know, developed, grew, went on his path, had this awakening experience, all these insights, and then he passed them on, the teachings and the path and the practices. And there's that sense that we all have this Buddha nature within us. I said a little bit about that earlier in the retreat. So when we're chanting his mantra, there's a certain sense where, yes, we're calling on him, trying to make a connection with him, but also trying to acknowledge that we want to be more like him, that we want to develop those qualities that we do already have within us, you know, that we want to become almost like the Buddha in a way. At least that's what I do, but for other people, it may just be you're chanting his name, so see. And Amitabha, again, I talked about this the other day when we did his mantra. He's one of these archetypal Buddhas. So you've got the historical Buddha, but then there's so much myth with the story of the Buddha. But we also have this mandala of five Buddhas. And they all have different colors, they all have lots of different symbolism associated with them. And Amitabha is the Buddha of meditation. He's the Buddha of the West. He's a Buddha who transforms craving into compassion. He's a Buddha who, what else does he do? Yeah, he helps transform poisons, any poisons, and his association with beauty. And he's one of these pure, he's, you know, I talked about the Pure Land school of Buddhism where Amitabha is very popular when you chant his name, and there's the idea that when you chant his name, you have that possibility of being reborn in his Pure Land where everything is a reminder, everything helps you to have your own awakening. And in fact, if you are reborn in his Pure Land, Sukhavati, the happy land, then your eventual awakening and enlightenment is assured. So that's not stuff that you necessarily need to know. I tend to think that sometimes, I mean, it's nice to have the context, but there's another level when we're mantra chanting where it's such a visceral, physical thing, and you're hearing the sounds and the vibrations are going on in your body, and then we can connect with other people chanting as well. And it's something about letting go of that rational thinking part of our mind that I think is an element sometimes when we're doing devotional practice, because we can't really think our way to insight and enlightenment, and there's so many experiences that are beyond words and concepts. And we want to bring the whole of ourselves into our spiritual practice. So Sangharakshita, person who founded our movement, he used to talk about what he called the language of the depths, and that, you know, you need to bring our unconscious energies, we need to bring all of ourselves there, and that means that sometimes we need to respond in a more poetic way, or things that respond to symbol and archetype. And so when we were talking about sound, and when we're talking about the images and the offerings, and we're working with energy, and sometimes we're working with emotions in a more direct way in a ritual. There is a certain letting go or surrendering of our thinking, our analytic, our rational mind, maybe, or they can be. Anyway,
Thank you.
I
That's very
don't know if that
important.
makes any sense at all,
Yeah,
at least.
it made a lot of sense. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that was a lot of talking. So I'm a little bit inclined to do a mantra just to get me out of being in the sort of more heady space. So we'll have a mantra, we'll have some just sitting, and then we'll do the puja. I think I've still got time for all of those, yeah. So, and I'd like us to do the Maitri mantra again. So, if you were there earlier today, we chanted Maitri. So, Maitri is metta. Sanskrit is Maitri, Pali is metta, and it's basically that kindness. And when we chant the Maitri mantra, there's Maitri, there's Maha Maitri, Great Maitri, and a lot of mantras end with this sort of Svaha, which doesn't particularly mean anything, does it? Do you want to say anything about that, Ratnadeva?
Something like all honor be yours, or praise be, if you like, in a parallel tradition. It's an expression of reverence, swaha, an exclamation.
Okay. Do you want even to go anywhere near Om or not?
Some of the syllables are have probably tomes written on them. And where do you start? It's Om is the universal symbol. I've seen it described as the universal abstract, and Hung is the universal concrete. So there's a journey. Om ah, no, I'm going into too much detail. Another syllable. So Om, Hung, these are sacred syllables that you find dotted around mantras. That's probably a terrible description of how they're played. They're probably placed with great care and creativity in mantras. And the second that the syllable we're going to encounter in the Amitabha mantra is Hri. So Hri is one of it's a bit like it's you can't pin it down really in a simple sentence or paragraph or 1,000-page book. As Bodhilila says, we build up associations with these syllables, and that they kind of resonate in our psyche and in our body through chanting in the mantra. That's my sense. We're stirring up energies through these syllables, if you like. You could call them sacred syllables.
Yes, they're often described as seed syllables, but I think sacred syllables helps. So the three mantras that we're going to be doing is Om Maitri, Maha Maitri, Maitriye Svaha. That's the where we're trying to connect with kindness and metta. And then during the puja, we'll be doing the Shakyamuni historical Buddha one, which is Om Muni Muni, Maha Muni, Shakyamuni, Svaha. So you see, you've got the Om and the Svaha in both of those. And then the final one that we're going to be doing is Om Amideva Hri. So you've got the Om, you've got Amideva, which is the name of Amitabha, and you've got the Hri as this other sacred syllable at the end. So, going to too much talking. Right. Oh, my tree, my tree, my tree, swaha. Oh, my tree, my tree, my tree, swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Om my tree, maha my tree, my tree swaha. Just sitting. Okay. So in a minute, we're going to end this session with a threefold puja and call and response. So Matnadeva and I will be doing that with you joining in at home. After the opening verse, as I said, we'll have the Shakyamuni mantra led by Ratnadeva. After the reverence to the three jewels, the verses there, we'll have this reading by Dil Gokhyentse Rinpoche, which I will read. And then after the offerings to the Buddha, Ratnadeva will lead us in the Amitabha mantra. So, if you just get yourselves ready, we'll do that now. Threefold puja. Opening reverence. We reverence the Buddha,
We reverence the Buddha, the
the perfectly enlightened one,
perfectly enlightened one,
the shower of the way.
the shower of the way.
We reverence the Dharma,
We reverence the Dharma,
the teaching of the Buddha,
the teaching of the Buddha,
which leads from darkness to light.
which leads from darkness to light.
We reverence the Sangha,
We reverence the Sangha,
the fellowship of the Buddha's disciples,
the fellowship of the Buddha's disciples.
that inspires and guides.
That inspires and guides. Om
Swahamuni, Shakyamuni, Swaha. Om Mani Mani Mahamuni, 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 Shakyamuni, Swaha.
Reverence to the three jewels. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
And aspire to follow him.
And aspire to follow him.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome.
What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome.
What the Buddha attained, we too can attain.
What the Buddha attained, we too can attain.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
The truth in all its aspects.
The truth in all its aspects.
The path in all its stages.
The path in all its stages.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
As one by one we make our own commitment.
As one by one we make our own commitment.
An ever widening circle.
An ever widening circle.
The Sangha grows.
The Sangha grows.
The intrinsic nature of the mind, from Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. What we normally call the mind is the deluded mind, a turbulent vortex of thoughts whipped up by attachment, anger, and ignorance. This mind, unlike enlightened awareness, is always being carried away by one delusion after another. Thoughts of hatred or attachment suddenly arise without warning, triggered off by such circumstances as an unexpected meeting with an adversary or a friend. And unless they are immediately overpowered with the proper antidote, they quickly take root and proliferate, reinforcing the habitual predominance of hatred or attachment in the mind, and adding more and more karmic imprints. Yet however strong these thoughts may seem, they are just thoughts and will eventually dissolve back into emptiness. Once you recognize the intrinsic nature of the mind, these thoughts that seem to appear and disappear all the time can no longer fool you. Just as clouds form, last for a while, and then dissolve back into the empty sky, so deluded thoughts arise, remain for a while, and then vanish into the emptiness of mind. In reality, nothing at all has happened. When sunlight falls on a crystal, lights of all colours of the rainbow appear. Yet they have no substance that you can grasp. Likewise, all thoughts in their infinite variety, devotion, compassion, harmfulness, desire, are utterly without substance. This is the mind of the Buddha. There is no thought that is something other than voidness. If you recognize the void nature of thoughts at the very moment they arise, they will dissolve. Attachment and hatred will never be able to disturb the mind. Deluded emotions will collapse by themselves. No negative actions will be accumulated, so no suffering will follow. Offerings to the Buddha. Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer flowers.
We offer flowers.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer candles.
We offer candles.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp we light within us.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp we light within us.
The lamp of Bodhi shining within our hearts.
The lamp of Bodhi shining within our hearts.
Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer incense.
We offer incense.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
Sweeter than incense.
Sweeter than incense.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world. Om Amideva Re. Om Amideva Re. Om Amideva. Om Amideva Re.
So we'll end there. Thanks for being here, for practicing together, and I hope you have a good evening, rest of your evening, maybe going straight to bed, maybe hanging out. But as always, just allow yourself some transition. It's a little immediate on an online retreat that when you leave a session, you're immediately back in your life. So just taking the time you need, the space you need, perhaps to absorb the day. And hope to see you all tomorrow at 10.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night. See you all tomorrow.
Thank you. Be well, everyone.
Night. Thank you.